The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We have the bases loaded today, ladies and gentlemen. We have three innovators in the studio today. We're going to talk about all kinds of problems that federal government IT professionals have and what each individual company has to solve that problem. Then at the end, we're going to have a free-for-all. We're going to talk about innovation. We're talking about helping my govies. And hopefully you'll walk out of here today with all kinds of information on how you can save money on different types of products and new. And the theme here is something called 1776, which is an innovation hub. Each one of these persons in the studio have had experience with 1776, and we'll talk about that and what it means for my listeners. Our first guest is a gentleman by the name of Blake Hall, and he has a company called ID.me. Blake, tell us real quickly about your background, please.
Sure thing. I was an Army Ranger, did a combat tour in Iraq, and then went to Harvard Business School, and I started ID.me there as an academic project in 2009.
Ooh, I love that. And all that stuff you learned, you applied, huh?
I did. The Army was really my introduction to both technology and entrepreneurship. A lot of the things that we were doing, running down high-value targets over there involved concepts related to identity. And it's really exciting now to get to put that experience into practice in the private sector to help defend people's personal information and to help them access benefits and services online.
So our typical user is a federal IT professional. They're being told to move to the cloud. They have to worry about security. They're getting their budget reduced. They're getting their staff all decimated. So why should they worry about ID.me? What can you possibly do to help them?
Sure. It's a great question. I think we're all very well aware of all the data breaches. It seems like every week there's a new agency or a major organization that suffers a major loss of personally identifiable information to the point where a lot of folks have kind of thrown up their hands and it's become part of the status quo. ID.me can play a really important role in reshaping the ecosystem to stop that. So if I step back and give you the 30,000-foot overview of the problem that we're solving, it really has to do with the absence of the government playing a trusted, neutral role in digital identity. So in the physical world, you have a driver's license or passport that you use to prove your legal identity no matter where you go. But neither of those credentials have been digitized. And so in the absence of the government playing a role as an identity provider, every company and industry is in the identity business for themselves. But unfortunately, they don't have your best interest as a consumer at heart. And so what we like to say is that the internet has not really come to digital identity, because what happens is you have to maybe go to Airbnb and prove your legal identity and put in a bunch of personal data, but then that data is locked in a silo. You can't use your Airbnb login to go open up a financial account to prove that you're you, even though Airbnb might have just taken a lot of the same steps that bank would require. Same thing with Citibank, right? You can go create an account with Citibank, prove your legal identity, create strong authentication, but then that login isn't useful at other banks to open up a financial account, because there's no way that Citibank wants to help you open up an account with Chase or Wells Fargo, right? So your identity is really held captive to these enterprises. And your most portable logins are Facebook, Connect, Google, and so on, because they're tracking your activity, so they're not trusted. Your most trusted logins are probably with your financial institution, but they're not portable, right? So trusted logins, not portable, portable logins, not trusted. And how that affects the federal government is that when citizens come to the federal government, they have to kind of start from scratch. They're answering a bunch of supposedly secret questions that aren't so secret anymore because of all the data breaches. And you've got an IT professional kind of crossing their fingers and hoping that that's not, the Russians or the Chinese on the other end of the line, and it's actually the person who's claiming the identity, that's being examined. And so how ID.me can help is we've built a platform that includes a credential broker and issuing capabilities, so that once a strong digital login is issued at any federal agency or at a financial institution for that matter, that login is then portable to third-party websites, so that you can basically have the digital equivalent of a driver's license or a passport online.
So the website is www.id.me. Is that where they can find more
information? That's correct. Okay. Yeah, not .com, ID.me.
I'm repeating this several times,
right.
So
thank
I know that
much.
It's ID.me. And so the two words that kind of, I don't know, I hear is a trusted intermediary. Who do you trust? There was a TV show years ago, so you're playing the game, who do you trust, don't you?
That's right. So, and there's an analogy, you know, we kind of take credit cards for granted, but in the 60s, when there were small banks issuing credit cards, you know, merchants said, how can I trust this bank that I've never heard of when somebody brings in a credit card from this bank? And so what happened was Bank of America was actually issuing these Bank of America cards, and that was the national credit card. If you were a small bank that wanted to issue a credit card, you're issuing Bank of America credit cards. And eventually the small banks got tired of it, and they said, hey, this trust mark can't be the mark of our competitor. We need a neutral trust mark so that our credentials can be trusted too. And so today, that's how Visa formed, you know, in the 60s. Where they created standards and operating rules. And now if you're a merchant, you could care less whether it's Bank of America or some local community bank. As long as it says Visa or MasterCard, you know that that login has been vetted, or that card, has been vetted to an appropriate threshold and standard. And that's the same way that digital identity should work. A classic hub and spoke model where if a citizen has already taken the steps to prove their legal identity and establish strong authentication with the bank, they shouldn't have to manage 30 plus logins that have the same requirements. They should be able to take that login with them, whether it's to the federal government or, you know, to prove that they're who they're claiming to be when they're making a high ticket, you know, purchase on an e-commerce website or some other use case that's similar.
Well, this sure sounds like civilian agencies to me. Application for the military as well?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to move incrementally, right? If you think about like Jeff Moore's crossing the chasm, who are the early adopters and who are the late adopters? I think if as the network progresses and as areas of opportunity and improvement are identified, you want to start with the lower risk use cases first before you get into areas like national defense. So I would view like DOD and national defense use cases later on. But at the same time, there are certainly national security interests at stake to improve the security of citizen access to the government. There are huge macroeconomic implications of data breaches as consumers lose confidence in being able to do business online.
So if you're listening to this as a podcast, or you're listening to this when there's snow on the ground, and maybe your agency is thinking about some kind of a transition to single sign-on, would that be the time to go over to your website, ID.me? Is that when
That's right. They go over to ID.me, or even, you know, if you want to reach out on Twitter, it's Blake_Hall, if they want to reach out to me directly to start a conversation. We're basically a single API that can federate multiple logins from trusted identity providers, including banks. And one of the cool things that we've done, which is a second patent that I filed, is we're using hashing. So once we see a particular name, social, and date of birth come across, we can establish a unique record of that individual. But since it's hashed, it's anonymous. We don't actually know who that individual is. So as soon as that identity is associated with a trusted login provider, their personal information can't be used to assert by an attacker that they are that person. So it basically means that once you've logged in across our network with, you know, ID.me or with a financial institution or so on, the only way to prove that you're you is through multi-factor authentication. We think that's really exciting because at scale, it renders all that compromised personal data harmless.
And are there agencies that have deployed your solution?
Yes, we're integrated with connect.gov and with GSA, and there are several applications live today with Veterans Affairs. And then we have some exciting news of some other agencies that I'll be able to talk more openly about in a few weeks.
That's the tease. That's the radio tease.
Yes.
After this commercial, we'll tell you the new exciting development.
Well,
here.
Hopefully I'm back in 10 days or so.
So I'm just trying to figure out, now, who the heck would you compete with? You compete with Do Nothing? You compete with the standard? I don't know who you compete with.
Well, so there are some other products that are out there. Symantec certainly has a broker capability that's similar. They also have issuing capabilities. But to my mind, I think there's going to be one kind of network, like one Visa, MasterCard. There's going to be a lot of different trusted issuers of identity. So we don't view them competitive in that way. Apple Wallet is really interesting. They're starting with like payments and loyalty, but as they've added biometrics into their hardware and everything else, I think if they are making a stealth play to be a trusted national identity provider, they've put a lot of the components in place across their ecosystem of hardware and software to go ahead and do that. And then the telecoms, you know, have talked about doing this for quite a while. They also talked about mobile wallets for quite a while and weren't able to kind of figure out a way to collaborate. So all of those organizations, I think to some extent, Google and Facebook have done this at lower levels of assurance, right? And I think they would love to figure out a way to do trusted use cases, but they would need an intermediary to wrap their credentials.
3 second question. Do you have an Apple Watch?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. That's what everyone wants to know anyway.
You've been listening.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio. We just heard an idea to help save you some time and some money from Blake Hall and his company is called IDMe. For more information, you can go to www.idme. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We have the bases loaded here today. We have three separate companies, all innovators that have a relationship with 1776. We like to talk to these, call these programs Innovation and Work Boots, trying to figure out how companies can help my listeners achieve their goals, maybe even leave work on time and accomplish some of the laudable goals that the people in the White House have asked my listeners to accomplish. And our second guest today is Jonathan Andy, and he's from a company called Seamless Docs. Jonathan, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, John.
So tell us your company name and the website, please.
Sure. It's Seamless Docs. You can visit seamlessdocs.com or you can actually visit seamlessgov.com for some more specific government information.
So www.seamlessdocs.com or seamlessgov.com. Is that right?
You got it.
Yeah, on the radio, you got to spell these things out because people, you know, they're in the car or something, they're writing it down. So when I think about your company, I think about digital signatures and contracts and validation and systems of records and correspondence. So give me in a nutshell why my listeners should go to your site or learn about your company.
Absolutely. So, you know, a large problem in government and especially in the federal government is forms and this ability to not just this desire to get all these forms so they can be filled out online, but there comes a lot with that. Security, integration. What about my existing processes? So what Seamless Docs does is we give you a really easy and robust tool to take all those PDF, take all those form processes, upload them to our platform, and now automatically we give you a ton of different functionality. You get now analytics. You can see who's visiting them, how they're visiting them. You get enhanced security because now everything is going to be secure over a secure connection. But now you can also fill it out from any device. And then after you fill it out, you can do an e-signature, and we automatically build a database of information, and we give you tools to manage that data. So in terms of why, this is just a really easy and great tool to be able to take all those PDFs that you might not know, how do I get these online? It's overwhelming. I have hundreds of them. I have thousands of them. And we have a robust tool to make that easy for you.
What's easy for my listeners to go on Twitter and they can find information at Seamless Docs and all kinds of information about your company. Now, some of my listeners are familiar with Microsoft. There's 8,000 Microsoft partners in the Mid-Atlantic area. And guess what? They have forms built in as a bolt-on thing for their SharePoint. So how do you respond to someone saying, hey, we're using SharePoint forms and they're fine?
Yeah. So in terms of we can actually integrate with SharePoint. But with that being said, our best use case is think about that PDF. Think about when you go to that local website or your website, that form section that right now maybe has 10, 20, 100 PDFs that need to be downloaded and filled out. That's our perfect use case. We'll go ahead and we'll take those PDFs and we'll turn them into online smart versions. So now that same PDF that used to have to be downloaded and faxed in or mailed in with a check, now it can be filled out online. We can make sure it's filled out properly with calculations. We can even integrate payment. And then, again, as I mentioned, one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to automatically build a database of that information, and we're going to give you tools to manage it. So it's not just anymore about collecting that data. It's not just about, it's about how do we also manage that? How do we give you workflow tools? How do we make sure that we understand how you as a government needs to process these forms?
There are listeners at the Department of Treasury and doing serious things with money, and they have fiduciary responsibility, and they go back and forth with lawyers, and they have to have a system of record, and they have to have documents that they can search. And I would imagine some of these documents have to have signatures, have to have forms involved in PDF. Seems like that would be a pretty good use case for one of your products, wouldn't it? Would that be a logical place for them?
Absolutely. And I think you know what you're seeing now as an IT professional is this call for transparency, this call for data, this call for machine-readable data, APIs, and all these great terms. But how do you get there? And I think what's so wonderful about Seamless Docs is that because we're exclusively focused to development for government, what we've enabled is we enable you not just to take that PDF and turn it to an online version. Yes, that's great. But on the back end, we're giving you all these incredible tools. Right now, you can automatically access that data via API. We can systematically, we have something called Open Record, where we can create a transparency portal of data with redaction tools. So now you can in real time create a portal for citizens or internal people to actually view that data and actually access that data.
Ooh, redaction. There's the phrase that pays for lawyers, isn't it? They love that redaction. It's great. There used to be a word processor called the Redactatron years and years ago. Give me another use case you think your system might fit in for one of my listeners.
So there's a ton for IT professionals. We range from taking a permit process and bringing that online and automating not just that first step, but the entire process. We do a lot of stuff with clerks departments. We even do a lot of stuff internally. So imagine that HR department that has compliance docs that need to be filled out constantly. So I would say almost every department within a government has some sort of form problem. If you're listening right now, I'm sure you're nodding your head online of like, oh, remember that last time I had to fill out that form. And we like to say, you know, imagine when you think of the future of government forms, do you think it involves a fax machine? Do you think it involves a scanner? Do you think, and you know, there was a question earlier about the Apple Watch. Well, why can't we get it? So yes, you get a buzz on your Apple Watch, you click a button and you click a couple of buttons and you've just submitted that form that used to involve a fax machine.
You know, when you said PDF, that kind of piqued my interest because, geez, if I had to go to 100 PDFs, open them up, scroll down, find out where Blake Hall signed it, and then close it up, that would take me 10 hours. What seems like is your system can assist in discovery or in analyzing larger data sets that are just peculiarly difficult to access.
Yeah, that's a great point. So one of the things that we're doing, again, is we're giving them searchable access to all of this data in real time. And maybe repeat that, in real time. So no more waiting for that data entry, no more waiting for it to be uploaded to the system. Literally, if me as a user, I fill out this form from my iPhone, me now as a processor in the government, I in real time have that data. And not only do I have that data, but we can actually make sure it's filled out right. No more spelling mistakes, no more handwriting issues, no more typing NY instead of New York. All that validation can now be done in real time, even calculations. So imagine now as an IT professional being able to enable your staff to not just get forms back in the best manner possible, but making sure that it's filled out right every time.
So you integrate with Microsoft, Salesforce, most systems out there?
Absolutely. So we have a really robust API. One of the things, as I mentioned earlier, because CMSDocs works exclusively with governments, we understand your needs. We're going to come in and we're going to either help you integrate, or we're going to provide you with API tools to easily take these data and documents and sync them with your existing systems.
So it's www.seamlessdocs.com. I was there this morning. Pretty mobile-friendly website. Pretty easy to kind of thumb through. You know, you used to thumb through the newspaper, but you can thumb through that site pretty easily. And all kinds of information on forms, editors, wizards, and records. So what's the wizard do that you have?
So I'm glad you asked. If you guys think about TurboTax, I mean, what is that experience like? And ultimately, all that's doing is it's a really fancy, intuitive way to fill out government forms. All it's doing is it's collecting that data and it's populating existing tax documents. Well, imagine that for any document. Imagine going and just from your iPhone, filling out some forms, filling out a form in a user way, and it doesn't ask you 50 questions if only 10 of them are pertinent to your situation. So what we do is in our easy-to-use builder, you upload that PDF and we can click a button and we turn that into a TurboTax, basically. So now you can answer those couple of questions. You click submit, it automatically populates that PDF. You now review and you sign it. And why is that so important to an IT professional? Because guess what? You get to keep that PDF. You don't have to retrain Mary and Bob in the back office. They still get that. Yet at the same time, we give you all the power of upgrading that experience. And we have a saying at Seamless Docs that, you know, we believe that interacting with your government should be a beautiful experience. Right? And I always get, there's some smiles here in the studio, but we really do believe that. And I think that we really want to debunk that myth of when you think about interacting with the government, it involves this waiting in line and number two pencils and adding up A and D.
I think if your agency's goal is to enhance citizen experience, you might want to go to his website and take a look at some of the products. Quick question for you. Do you have an Apple Watch on order or do you have one on your arm?
I actually just ordered a gold one.
Did you really? A $17,000 one. Oh, I'm sure.
No. It's gold.
Spray painted gold.
Exactly. I got it on the street in Chinatown in Canal Street. So,
you've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Got a special show today, Innovation and Work Boots, talking about three different companies that can help agencies reach their goals for this year. And the last one we talked about was Seamless Docs that can help you in all kinds of different applications, especially with forms. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Got a special show today. We got all three bases filled up today. I call this the Innovation in Work Boots program. We have three separate companies that help my listeners solve three separate different types of problems. And our next guest is June Marshall, and the name of her company is Reparyo. How are you doing today, June?
Great, thanks. Glad to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and how you started this company, please?
Sure. June Marshall. I've worked in federal contracting, supporting, doing business development consulting for federal contractors in wireless and construction and technology infrastructure. Worked in five industries before that in various roles, operations, sales, strategy, market research, emerging technology, and started my company back in 2011.
I saw on LinkedIn that you work for the Powers Group. Sounds like weightlifters or something, huh? The Powers Group.
Electrical distributor. Perfect
name. Oh, they weren't weightlifters, huh?
And that's his real name.
How, is this Johnny Powers? What's his first name?
Tom Powers.
Tommy Powers. Well, he should be a pro wrestler or something, huh? Yeah. I work for a Tommy Powers. We have a lot of experience with all kinds of different types of acquisition for the federal government. And so from a perspective of my listeners, why should they go to your website? And by the way, if you want to go to their website, it's reperr.io. So why should they go to your website? What problem do you solve for my listeners?
Well, working with contractors over the last 5 years, large and small, I learned that a number of them face similar pain points. Whether you're large or small, you are in the process of evaluation of up to 30 different opportunities for maybe every three or four that you actually have the capacity and the resources to execute on. And all things being the same, if you have a great relationship with a customer, if you've worked in that market before, if you have good relationships with teaming partners and subs and you can perform the scope of work, the last thing that remains that is the differentiator and has a massive potential impact on your win rate is the competitive landscape. And you know, initially as a BD person, you know, doing business development, you know, your worst fear is bringing 1,000% of opportunities than your client has the capacity to execute on. And so the first thing that I worked on was increasing deal execution, increasing transparency between operations department, marketing, estimating, BD, and capture so that everyone could see where they were on any particular bid. And in a multiple bid environment with shifting bid dates, that was really key. So that had an unintended consequence, though. They became so good at bidding that they bid everything and became less strategic, and that increased costs on labor in terms of proposal and estimating, and their win rate actually went down. So
from a perspective of a federal IT professional here, they would consider using your product and services for evaluating competitors, maybe even predicting who the competition is going to be. Is that what they use it for?
Absolutely. Assessing the competitive landscape, looking for the best teaming partners if they're looking at going into a new market. Who are the players in that market? Which customers are they working with? What are the market share of the contract vehicles that they hold in that market? You know, if I can save a contractor from making a massive investment into moving into a new market without realizing that all of the teaming partners in place have been, you know, teamed with their competitors, that's great. Also for subcontractors, it's really crucial to team with primes that have the highest potential win rate, because as a first tier and especially as a second tier sub, your win rate is a percentage of a percentage. So, you know, currently the tools out there, if you want to find contractors and teaming partners, you'll look in SAM.gov or DSBS, but you can only look at the company by their location, not their market share with that customer, their revenues by place of performance. So we show who the players are, who the active subcontractors are in every market, what their relationships are. And we show them in context with their overall revenues in that NAICS code, in that scope of work with that customer, and in, you know, fine-grained geographic areas where they're MSA or state or region.
So let me pricked a scenario here. So we have Jonathan Ender. He's thinking about bidding on a contract. He's considering Blake Hall. He can use your service to find out if Blake Hall has got any past performance in that agency, if he has any competency, whether you should waste even a telephone call to Blake. Is that what the application would
Absolutely.
Be?
Absolutely. It's a platform to do comprehensive due diligence, to be able to see the complete aggregation of all their revenues across all of the entities that they use to transact with the government, an aggregation of all of the geography where they work, the geography of where they want to work, which is key, a measure of their geographic distribution, all of the contract vehicles that they hold, what their market share on those vehicles are in each market, And there's a use case for government as well for market research.
Talk about that. From a listener's perspective, if they have Blake Hall and Jonathan Endy bidding on the same contract, would your tool be able to help me evaluate them?
Well, let's back up a little bit. Even earlier, when a requirement lands on your desk and you need to, you know, your current method is to put out a sources sought to find out what the available contractors are and what their capabilities are and if they're active and have capacity. And that's very inexact. They're, you know, small businesses especially are not sitting at fbo.gov hitting refresh, and a lot of sources sought notifications get missed. And so what we propose with Riparyo is, you know, in the process of, in advance of developing the past performance requirements, you can enter the proposed past performance requirements and a geographical restriction and be returned exactly the number of potentially qualified offers for each one of those proposed sets.
Some people would call that predictive analytics. That's a pretty fancy phrase, isn't it? I guess it would be, isn't it?
It is. We'll save the technical discussion for later.
Yeah. Well, aren't there informal ways to do it, too? I mean, you know, in just the different communities, you go to events and you meet someone and go, well, I know Blake and he works in that area and, mm-hmm. and Ralph works in this area and Rohan works in this area. So even if I do know Rohan Gupta works in a specific area, I can use your tool to find out if, in fact, he does have competence, or maybe it's assuming his past performance.
Well, absolutely. And you can also have a much more substantive discussion by, you know, really having done due diligence and already knowing by the time you meet with that person what your potential areas for collaboration are.
Hmm. And so before I do an interview, I look at your LinkedIn profile. Mm-hmm. So before you interview a company, you can find out information about them, whether it's going to be a waste of your time or not, or whether it's a good fit. You'll know whether mm-hmm. it's a good fit without wasting a half hour of an interview time. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I want to emphasize, too, we're showing, you know, all companies that have prime past performance and sub past performance, but we're also showing the, you know, all companies that have capabilities in all areas and also their interest history. And that's important information.
Well, how do you keep up with all these different companies? I mean, this is 24 hours a day. I mean, I don't know how you can do it.
It's automatic refresh every day. And, you know, this is something that this is an idea that I have iterated over a long time with customers, you know, individuals that I have met actually in the Society of American Military Engineers, which is a fantastic organization with large numbers of members of, you know, acquisition personnel.
With all those castles
DOD.
Everywhere, right? Castles
yes.
everywhere. We
yeah.
know they are.
And contractors. And the pain points are the same on both sides. They need to find capable and available contractors that meet the needs of their upcoming requirements. And contractors need to be able to find the best opportunities and the best teaming partners that they can come in strong, you know, on a compliance matrix, you know, and do a lot of upfront work and being able to find the right teaming partners.
MacArthur Boulevard here in D.C. has that big castle there. I keep thinking of those engineers. They always build castles when they build things. But if you're working for an emergency situation, you got to respond quickly. You don't mm-hmm. have 6 weeks to evaluate proposals. You may have 6 days or 6 hours. And so mm-hmm. a tool like yours might assist an acquisition professional in making an informed decision quickly.
Absolutely.
I keep thinking of turnaround time and things going on back and forth. When I go to your website, it says that the product's currently in betas. In beta, is it finished, or what stage is that now?
We have a number of customers that are beta testing it. We have a waiting list for the actual platform, but we offer our reports now, competitive landscapes based on a subject solicitation or forecasted opportunity or a specific place of performance, for example, needing an estimator, needing to find quickly subcontractors that have past performance at a certain place of performance or in a certain regional area.
Sounds more like alpha than beta. What's the website again?
Riparyo, Repper.io.
So it's a .io. It's not a .com, is it?
.io.
Okay. I just want to repeat that because everyone's going to type in Riparyo.com and get confused. So there's no .com in there at all. Mm-hmm. It's .io. It's very important to know. And I got to ask you the same question, ask everyone else. Do I see an Apple Watch anywhere? You got one on order, one of the fancy ones or the spray paint ones? What kind you got?
You do not. I am always trying to find ways to ditch my phone and disconnect. I'm never going to be wearing an Apple Watch.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Great. Well, you've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio. We just had a segment with June Marshall from Riparyo. We talked about evaluating proposals and partnering with people, both from the federal government and from a contractor's perspective. For more information, you can go to our website at repper.io. Thank you very much. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We have a special show today. It's the Innovation in Work Boots show, where we have three different companies that talk about how they have ideas that can help my listeners solve problems. And the three companies we've brought in the studio still sitting around here. We have Blake Hall from ID.me, ID.me. We have June Marshall from Repairio, R-E-P-P-E-R.io. And Jonathan, and the only .com in the room here, seamlessdocs.com. What I want to do is open up the discussion here and talk about being an entrepreneur, what the challenges you face, what an innovation hub like 1776 can help or hurt, because all of you three, that's the theme here. You all have some kind of experience with 1776. I'm going to start with Jonathan and talk about being an entrepreneur and learning about government needs and responding to those needs. And what's the role of an innovation hub?
Absolutely. And I think I'll try to answer both of those. And as an entrepreneur, 1776... and David Zipper, Evan, Donna, I think they really helped us not just be an entrepreneur, but also be an entrepreneur in government. And I think I mentioned earlier by debunking this myth that interacting with government needs to be a bad experience. And you know, our mission at Seamlessdocs is how do we make that a beautiful experience? Well, I think 1776 and what they're doing over there is incredibly important because they're debunking the myth that it's hard for startups, it's hard for software companies to work with government. And I don't know if there's a better mission out there right now in terms of how are we going to continue to propel innovation within government. And I think what they're doing over there is just so incredibly important. I know when we first got started, I'm not sure we would be as far as we are right now if it wasn't them, you know, saying, hey, there's other people out there, hey, linking us up and connecting us with people in government that really are those early adopters and were champions for us early. And now as we're later stage, they continue to support us. So couldn't be bigger fans for 1776 and the GovTech movement.
And by the way, it's another funny one, 1776.io. It's like your company, June, huh? Another
I think they're .vc.
Is it .vc? Oh, yes. Boy, there's so many new ones now, .com,
.vc.
What a
country that is.
Yeah. So June, what's your experience been? Has it been a benefit to you, 1776? Help at all?
Absolutely. I'm a new member. I've been a member for a couple of months, and I have gotten so much value out of the mentor appointments. They have a really impressive deep bench of mentors with experience in government, entrepreneurs with several exits, people with expertise in go-to-market strategy, working with the government, technology, development, marketing. I mean, the list goes on. And I try to do at least one or two mentor appointments a week. And my experience with every one of them has been transformational. They have given me ideas that I never considered. They've given me perspectives on my own product and customers that I didn't consider. And even better, they opened up their network, you know, to allow me to follow up with, you know, four or five or even six more people.
Sounds like a testimonial. Hallelujah. Yeah. Not bad. So, Blake, you're kind of the other end of the spectrum here. We got this bowl's too hot. This one's too cold. This one's just right. You've been through the process and now you're off pretty much away. But you started at 1776, right?
Right. So Evan has been a good friend of mine for a number of years. We were actually on a run together when he, you know, kind of gave me the pitch for he envisioned for 1776. He'd just been up to Chicago to visit, I think it's 1871 up there. And they'd really created a platform for a city. And as he was describing what he wanted to do with 1776, you know, I thought about my experience in D.C. from 2011 as an entrepreneur where, you know, Starbucks was my office space. And that's what I used for Wi-Fi. And we had like customer service being delivered from a dining room table, you know, in a townhouse on Swan Street outside of DuPont Circle. And 1776 is so important because it provides a platform for the city where as a young entrepreneur, I mean, one of the coolest things about being an entrepreneur in America is that there are so many people outside of your team that are part of your team. And if you can recognize that, you know, your sales and your business development introductions are coming from folks who've just been exposed to you at a mixer or something that really respect the risk that you're taking and your passion, they want to help you win. 1776 formalizes that. They provide a single point where folks who want to help and mentors can come. And so it's almost like you have a pre-built, you know, board of advisors and mentors where all this expertise that if you had to go, you know, get it for yourself point to point would be incredibly difficult to do. It's just there for you. And so that immediately resonated, you know, as he was talking about it. I firmly believe, knowing Evan and Donna, that they were the right people to actually make the platform work, which is the other half of the equation. And yeah, it's just been unbelievable to watch it flourish. And you know, I've met President Obama and David Cameron and the Queen of Jordan there, so as well as Michael Dell and several, you know, famous VCs. So it's been a wonderful experience.
1776.vc. So Jonathan, I teach a course in marketing, and the very first class I bring in a megaphone and I say, it's not to shout, and it's turn around and you listen to the customer and you listen to what their needs are. And how has 1776 helped you listen and find out what the government needs are? I mean, that's really the first step in marketing, I think.
Yeah, I think, and then another, the next evolution of that lesson is, I guess, is making sure you're listening to the right person.
Better megaphone, huh?
Yeah. So sometimes it doesn't matter how big the microphone is. Sometimes it's
where it's directed,
how pertinent it is.
Yeah.
And I think that 1776 definitely got us in touch with the right microphones. Again, I think, you know, it can be quite daunting as a startup, you know, trying to approach government. Who are the right people? You know, it's an industry that is, you know, wants to innovate, but it's so important getting in touch with those right people. So I definitely think that 1776 got us in touch with those right people, connected us, and just being part of that network and that family. And I think that we've been very lucky as a GovTech startup to have support from, you know, from organizations like Urban Us and 1776 and the GovTech Fund and Code for America. And with each one of these, it just extends our network. And it's so great even being in the room with people, you know, like Blake and June here, that are also working on this incredible mission, right? It's just something that I don't know if I could be more passionate about, not just getting to work and something I love to do every day, but getting to do it for government. And I really believe that not just Seamless Docs is going to change the way government works, but all of us, you know, in this community, in this GovTech community that are striving to working and putting all this entrepreneurial passion towards changing government is a very exciting movement.
You know, June, NFL quarterbacks spend the offseason practicing, getting better and better and better, and even if they're at the top of the game. When I look at your company, you have hundreds of people who are in line waiting for your product, yet you open yourself up to criticism from 1776 to try to get better, to try to sharpen that sword and get better and better. So I think that's just incredible that you would open yourself up to that in spite of all the success you've had already.
I seek critical feedback everywhere that I can get it. It's only going to inform my product development more. And you know, I try to talk to everyone that I can about, you know, their experience of their biggest pain points in federal acquisition, whether they're on, you know, in the government or as a contractor, in the capture role, in the estimating role, in the business development role.
You know, Blake, I had an Army Ranger in the studio about a month ago, and he said, the Army Rangers learn how to work in small teams and be flexible and adapt. And I said, that sounds like agile software development. He said, yeah. And so has 1776 helped you develop small teams, learn flexible, and adapt? I guess it has.
Yeah, I mean, well, those are some of the skills that I learned in the military for sure. But the most common thing is no plan survives first contact with the enemy is a very common military saying. Well, in entrepreneurship, no plan survives first contact with the customer. And when that plan falls apart and, you know, some assumptions that you had are valid, some assumptions you find out are very invalid, that's where you really need a great team of mentors and advisors to help you reform that plan and make sure that you're pointed in the right direction. And especially as a first-time entrepreneur, it is incredibly vitally important to have folks who have been down that road before, who have made mistakes, who can help you learn without you wasting, you know, time in your life, literally, and a lot of other folks' capital in order to deliver a product that actually fits customer needs. And I mean, yeah, 1776, Evan and Donna and David and Brandon Pollock have done an absolutely wonderful job of providing a platform that helps entrepreneurs do just that. And it is, it's an incredibly noble mission because these are products that are helping consumers and changing people's lives for the better.
So Jonathan, even someone like you with good basic native intelligence, maybe a lot of success in other careers, when you become an entrepreneur, you got to just humble yourself, don't you? You got to humble yourself and say, hey, I'll shut up and listen, and maybe 1776 can give you credible people to listen to.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's definitely a very humbling experience. In the beginning, you're putting yourself out there. And we've been lucky to have support system, as I mentioned earlier. And I think that, you know, I used to always say, you know, as a startup, it can be lonely. But then when you're lucky to be in certain demographic areas, you know, like DC, New York, San Francisco, you get more support system. But then all of a sudden, when you're a GovTech startup, or at least for us in New York, being a GovTech startup based out of New York, all of a sudden we were lonely again. And 1776 gave us that company and gave us that reassurance that, hey, there are other companies like you and you guys can all learn from each other. And I think that's so incredibly important.
Lonely in New York. That's the first one. 6 million people. You're the only one alone in New York. But I guess a government contractor would be. We're going to have to end the show now. We had a lot of good experiences here. This program is called Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, but this segment's called Innovation Work Boots. Three companies from 1776 show how we can help our federal listeners achieve their goals and maybe get work done on time and achieve some of the noble goals that the federal government's asked them to do, moving to the cloud, encryption, and being safe. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests Blake Hall from ID.me, June Marshall from Riparyo, and Jonathan Ende from Seamless Docs. Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.